Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Stage Right Podcast. On today's show, we have our good friend, Colton Place, guitar player and lead singer for the band Pacific Dub. What's up, dude?
What is happening, my friends? Thank you for having me.
We should also mention that our last guest, Dave Delaney, is the drummer for the amazing Colton's band. So we're keeping in the family for this episode here.
Yeah, we're actually changing the name. It's now Colton Place and the Pacific Dubs.
So that's what I'm saying, man. I miss those names from those old school bands, you know?
Those entitled pricks.
Let's go. I can't even think of a band that has that name.
Me either. That's funny stuff.
Yeah. Rory and the Hurricanes. Ringo Starr, man. Come on.
Chris McCone and the Esteviuses.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks for having me, boys. Nice to see you.
Dude, thanks for coming on, man. Good to see you too.
It's been quite some time.
Where are you calling in from today?
I am at my house in Costa Mesa, California.
Let's go. How are the fires out there? Is that getting you?
Dude, so it was pretty brutal for like a little while. I mean, I can't say that we're necessarily close, so we weren't like in a danger zone or anything, but it was pretty like that apocalyptic gray with a red sun for like a couple weeks, and just yesterday it kind of broke a little bit. I took my dog to the beach and wasn't worried about like inhaling ash the whole time. And then today was beautiful. So, I mean, knock on wood, it's been pretty nice. Seems like they're containing them a bit more, and the weather's, the winds have kind of died down a little bit, which I think is nice. But besides that, dude, business as usual over here.
And the wind is what helps you, because in Utah, we had those fires as well. When I was there on a little trip, and the winds came in at like 60 mile an hour gusts, and the next day it was just gorgeous. It blew all the smoke just clear of that area.
Oh, dude, it'll help us, but it just rages the fires way more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
someone just had to have that gender reveal. I can't believe that's
dumb. Oh my God, bro. I can't believe. And it's not the first time that's happened either.
I know.
That's like, the sad part. Guys.
Like, how dumb are you? Like, there's a statewide ban on fires, and you set off fireworks in a national park. The fuck are you thinking?
They're not. It's like an inability to, like, process information in your brain that allows you to, like, just overlook such a blatant violation. Wow.
It's unreal. Well, I'm going to jump right in here. We have one thing cool. We talk about on almost every episode of this show.
Whoa.
And it's morning bagels.
Bro,
I want to know what your bagel setup is. What kind of cream cheese you go for?
Yeah, what kind of schmear you go for?
First off, I'd like to say that I've heard about this, as you stated before. My esteemed drummer and colleague David Delaney had great things to say about this.
He went in on the bagel talk. He went deep.
Bro, I want to like tell you guys my bagel setup, but I also need to call somebody out in my band about being a bagel poser.
Please.
So first off, it depends kind of like, you know, like I'm also a fan of like the bagel sando. So like, even if it's not a breakfast bagel, I enjoy like a good sandwich on a bagel.
I did one this morning.
Dude, come on. But I think the best classic bagel setup is just a straight up everything bagel toasted well. With just some regular cream cheese, you know, and like that, you can never go wrong with a classic setup like that.
Well, what are your thoughts on the strawberry cream cheese? And what's your cream cheese brand? That's important too.
Philadelphia, but I keep it OG.
Classic,
you know.
You got to go Philly.
I'm a little older than you. I don't test the waters quite as much as you young kids do.
Oh my god.
But dude, you know, like Einstein Bros, you get some schmear every once in a while, some blueberry or strawberry schmear, you know?
Yeah, that's strawberry schmear. Let's go.
Come on. If I'm choosing schmear, it's got to be strawberry.
Okay.
See, there we go. I need some opinions on this. My bagel this morning was Thomas International cinnamon raisin with mayo, three slices of turkey, and pepper jack.
Beautiful. Did you toast the bagel a little bit and then put the meat and cheese and then toast it the rest of the way?
I didn't do the secondary toast. I stayed with only the primary toast.
Dude,
it takes time, but it's worth it.
You got to melt the cheese.
Yeah.
See, we don't have one of those toasters, though. We don't have, like, the toaster oven. It's just the slide-in toaster is all we got.
You just put it on its side. That's all you have to do.
It's not going to fit, doggy.
No, you put the fucking toaster on its side.
Oh,
put the toaster on.
You gotta flip the toaster and then you fucking put it in.
This has been another bagel innovation from the Stage Right podcast.
Oh man, I'm gonna work my ass off to try and get you guys like some kind of like a fridge air or like some kind of appliance sponsorship. I'm gonna get you a toaster oven, son.
No, we need the bagel. We need like the Brugger sponsorship or the Einstein sponsorship.
That way you don't have to make your own bagels ever again. You get them delivered straight to you.
There we go.
Dude, fresh bagels every morning in a box.
Oh, good time. Oh man, life.
I'm drooling. Can't beat already. That.
Fresh smear.
Oh yeah, but also next time we see each other, however far and away it may be, in the vein of a proper bagel connoisseur, you need to talk to my bassist Adam Carrillo about how much he quote unquote loves Bagel Sandoz, although I've never seen him order one time, and we've been to so many sandwich what? Shops where the bagel is an option.
And you guys have toured together.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, dude. Since like 2000.
No. You got to call him out on that. Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Carrillo.
Dude.
You're fucking
up, my friend. I can't even count how many bagels I've seen in OC.
Oh, in my thousands. God, dude. I mean, it's.
He's going to be so pissed that I told you guys this.
Sometimes multiple per day. I mean.
Also, I want to mention a new segment that we're talking about here on the Stage Right podcast where, you know how Barstool Sports does the pizza reviews?
Yeah.
I think as soon as Los and I travel again, we're going to start doing bagel reviews in whatever city we're in and really just give out the fire bagel tips.
We're only helping people and creating content at the same time. Like, hey, here we are eating breakfast. We're helping people.
It's the biggest thing because you need to find the fire bagel
here's
spot.
Here's the schmear. Here's the fresh bagel. Maybe it was cooked on the spot. Maybe not. Is it fresh? Is it not? And then you get your little review, man. Live.
I think that you guys would be doing the world a disservice if you didn't do this.
That's what I'm saying.
You know? Because you got to know where the good bagels are.
You got to use technology to your advantage. You know what I mean, man? Like, just...
Exactly.
And I got one more bagel question for you, Colton.
Cool.
Before we move on. What are your feelings on the bagel cream cheese salmon capers? The lox bagel, the classic.
Dude, I'm... always a fan.
Let's go.
Yeah, we threw that up on our Instagram, and it seemed like most, like, I think 8 or 9 votes out of 10 were, I'm a fan of the lox bagel. I think, I was surprised. I thought that was more of a acquired taste, but I think people did.
It's got to be a good smoked salmon, though. Like, it can't be some, like...
That's the thing. The fishy smoked 100%. Salmon, that's a no-go. We just got some of that from Buyerless. It was a really fishy smoked salmon. I had to throw it out. It's got to be
proper.
I've
been digging? Kind of like the smoky, like, cured, more dry salmon.
Oh.
Dude.
Yo, have you gone on to that the salmon jerky train or the tuna jerky?
I have not.
I don't
smells
really do
like
jerky.
Smells like absolute shit, but it's low fat and it's delicious.
How are the farts?
Oh, they're gnarly.
Bro, I don't know if I can do that.
That's my girlfriend's problem, not mine.
I can't even like, we got some dog treats for my dog that were like salmon, dried salmon treats. I can't even
give
them to her.
From Trader Joe's?
I think so.
Dude, I have those.
But bro, they're so brutal.
Every time I open that box, I'm just like, oh, God, you like
these?
Dude,
the closet. Oh, okay. I keep them in our entry hall closet. And just the closet that they're in smells like fucking salmon. Now I got to like wash my coats and shit before
I
use them in the fall.
I had to put it like inside two containers and the bag is like rolled up. It's crazy,
like,
dude.
You got to vacuum seal it like you're sending weed across the country or something.
Basically. I don't know what Trader Joe's does with these salmon jerky treats for dogs, but wow. Colton. Mahalos. Dude. So how long have you guys been a band for? I think I asked Dave this question, but. I want to hear your side of the thing.
We
of
have, I guess, officially been releasing music since 2009. The first track that we ever released was our original guitarist, Bryce, and I recorded the whole track on our own. So we technically didn't have a band yet. I think that was like early 2009. We ended up finding our original bassist, Ryan, at that same time, like right before we all graduated in 2009, Dave graduated in 2007, and then we found Dave through Ryan. So as like an official band, oh, it's God, been since like 2009. And then we really became, you know, that was like kind of the high school band days kind of stuff.
Oh, he's gone.
And then...
He's back.
did I go away?
Oh, you hardcore froze.
Oh, shit. I do not know what happened. Good, am I back? Where did we leave off?
The start of the story with Ryan.
Okay. Anyways, yeah. So we found Ryan, and then through Ryan, we found Dave. That was kind of like the start of the official band, as like the high school band jamming in the garage, jamming when we can. And then 2010, we put out an EP, and our first tour ever was with the Iration guys on their Time Bomb tour.
Nice.
In 2010.
Wow.
So I guess we were a band in 2009, but like I don't really count those days because like those are the...
That was mostly you still searching for the rest of the band, yeah?
Yeah, we were kind of searching. And then even when we found each other, it was kind of like the feel out, like we're going to get together and jam, have a couple beers. It wasn't anything like official, you know?
Right.
Okay. How do you guys go about like the writing process in the band?
It's changed throughout the years, depending, you know, on the project and stuff. I'd say most recently, it's a lot of, primarily I'm recording ideas. I record demos in Logic, just really like entry level demos or like voice memos on my phone, yeah. Just acoustic guitar, like vocal ideas. I send it to the guys. I see what they like. I send it to the two different producers that I've been working with for all of our newer stuff. See if they like it. When there's stuff that we can all kind of agree on, full ideas, I'll like formulate the rest of the song, build it, and then kind of been taking them into... I work with Nathan, Chris Yule. Remember Nathan? He was our bassist when we did the tour in 2018. Yep. He's now just like our full-time producer. And then our other producer is Joey, who is doing our tour managing and stage stuff on that tour as well. And he now does not tour with us anymore either and has gone to like a full-time producer role. So those two guys are like pretty instrumental in just basically all of the music that we write. Like bouncing ideas off of them and having their feedback has become like extremely, extremely valuable to me. And then also, you know, I send it to the boys and make sure that everyone's on board and you know, as soon as we're all on board with the project, then
move forward.
We go
for
it.
That's awesome that you have a couple of producers, like a team that can help you view things like outside of the box. Cause
yeah, anyone external, you know, to kind of give that kind of outside perspective on that kind of stuff is always super helpful.
Yeah.
Fully, man. Yeah. And like they're also like Nathan's been even before he was with us in P-Dub, he was in a band called Sono Vero. So he's been in the scene since he was in high school. Joey has been scene adjacent, I would say. Just from working with some of his friends in bands and working with other people out here. He's from the East Coast, but he's been out here for a handful of years now. So I think they both have a firm grasp on the scene and kind of like what it's all about, the kind of music that goes on. Cause you know, it's like a pretty specific
sound,
you know, sound. Yeah. Not to say that there's not a lot of diversity with a lot of the bands in our scene, but, you know,
I think like a feel and a sense of like respect that you got to pay to like the roots of it all.
Yeah, man. It's about like, I think for me specifically as a songwriter, it's a lot about, paying a homage, like being able to respect, like you said, the original sound, but also not like necessarily biting the sound. You know, I'm not, we're not from Kingston, you know, like we're not roots reggae musicians by any means. We're extremely inspired and obviously like a lot of the inspiration in the early days came from that. But also a lot of it, I think the cool thing about like the new wave is that like the bands that are doing big things, the bands are really like on top right now, have been able to take it in a respectful way and make it their own and not just like try and copy the roots stuff, because we're not roots musicians, you know, like it'd be like me trying to rap about like growing up in the streets, and I really just didn't, you know. It's like, I'm not trying to like quote unquote,
to
like
rap,
I guess,
about like Compton and
yeah,
exactly.
As much as like that music is inspiring and dope to me, like I you
yeah,
can't,
you're right about what influences you and your surroundings. Totally, man.
So I want to touch on two more things really quickly. One, I want at least one piece of dirt on Dave Delaney, since we just had him on the last podcast. And then second, I want to.
That guy is just like, man, do you even have a bad bone inside your body, dude?
We all know he doesn't.
Such a sweet fucking dude, man. I love Dave.
We love you, Dave. And then I want to talk to you about your gear setup a little bit. But let's start with the dirt on Dave.
Dude, I got to rack my brain a little bit. I got to give you something good enough that it's juicy here, but not something that will incriminate me or like, you know. He's going to hear this podcast. He's going to immediately call you and be like, I need to do another one because I got to tell you this stuff about Colton.
Yeah. we didn't have you planned for this one yet. So we didn't ask Dave for dirt on you, which we really should have done. But
dude, you know, to be completely honest, there's not too much dirt that David Delaney has brought into this world because he's
he just brings love, doesn't he?
He's just a genuinely nice guy that like kind of shies away from drama and like issues. So even like back in the days when like there would be like band fights or whatever, he's kind of like the last one to like speak up until it's like things have mellowed back out. Right. And like,
but he must have like sharded once or taken like a mean hot bag in the van. There's got to be something.
No, dude, none of that. I'll tell you one that like he's gonna, I feel bad even saying it because like in the moment, like this sadness on his face, like, like it can make just a grown man cry. But we're in Colorado and we have like a day off and we're driving. He started a drive for some reason. We were driving super late at night and he started the drive. And everybody else is kind of like asleep. And I wake up to like a text from him. And he's like, dude, can you come up here and help me out? Like Google Maps is like really throwing me around like in the weird places. And so I get up and like go up there with him. And I was like, where the fuck are we, dude? And we're like, instead of going like down from Colorado into New Mexico and then over into Texas, we went like east from like Pueblo, Colorado. Like, and we're like about to be in Oklahoma. And I'm like,
oh no.
And like, it wasn't his fault at all. But like the cherry on top of the very fast, like we're about to stop and get gas. Like we're like on the E line, right? Like trying to like make it to the spot. And a fucking fox darts out into the middle of the road. Like he could have done nothing. But like the cherry on top of this like terrible fucking drive is that we just murdered a fox.
Oh no.
we got to the gas station. He made it. He had to like get out and like collect himself. I was like, bro, it's all good. Like, it's not your fault. I'm sorry, Dave.
Oh my God.
You're not a murderer.
Also, if that's the worst thing Dave's done, oh my God, what a great soul.
Wow.
We love you, Dave.
Kill? Yeah, that's awesome. What a great
I can't say we've had any of like really bad like people shitting themselves in the van or whatever. There's been like a couple like throw up situations, but like, it's always the worst of it is always like, grab me a bag, I'm gonna puke, and then like I gotta hold the bag until we stop again. Like nobody's ever like thrown up outside of a trash bag or anything.
I know Lo and I've heard some bad stories about that from a band that will remain nameless, but someone leaned out of their bunk and puked onto the floor in the middle of the night and then proceeded to pass right back out.
Oh man.
And the guitar player had to clean it up.
I've definitely heard horror stories like that too, of like people doing like not necessarily bus tours, but you got like, you know, you have a lot of the modded out like vans and kind of like the Sprinter that we have, like with the bunks in it and shit. You hear stories of people doing that where it's like they roll out of their bed and like they got to piss, but we're not going to stop for a while and grab a Gatorade bottle or something. And you're pretty drunk, like driving on the road and you think that you're like pissing perfectly in the bottle. And then like some dude's like, who's dripping water on?
This water's so warm. Why?
I've got a roadkill story to share. Anyone knows, one of the most legendary men in Minneapolis is Conrad, who is the only non-musician to have his name on a star on First Avenue.
Shout out to Conrad, dude.
He's the stage manager there. He's a great guy. I love him to death. I was just at his cabin a few weeks ago, and he was telling me the story when he was driving through somewhere in rural Midwest. And for some reason, and Conrad's a really tough guy. like, I can't ever imagine Conrad crying. But apparently he was driving through the Midwest and a whole like flock of like, I don't know if it's a flock or what, but like 200 bunny rabbits were running across the road.
Oh God, no.
And he couldn't miss them. And he said he was just like mowing down hundreds of bunnies and like tears coming down his face as he just mowed down all these rabbits as they were driving across country.
Oh. Oh, wow, dude.
I can't so imagine brutal. Anything more horrific. Like, and hearing that from this like old, you know, gnarly stagehand legend, it was just the, wow. the funniest story I've ever yeah. heard in my life.
Dude, what do you guys usually do on like days off, you know, as like a band or individually or both? Do you try to like keep to yourself? Do you guys plan stuff together as a group?
I think for the most part, we generally like to do stuff together. I think that we're still, you know, like we don't hate each other enough yet to want to just
that's
like,
really good.
Sit alone.
Glad to hear that.
But yeah, like bowling is like a big thing that you can generally do everywhere, which is fun.
Oh, no.
When we're in the proper places, we always try to, we generally gravitate towards some body of water, whether it be like a beach or a lake or a river, whatever the hell we can find and have some chill time to swim. Or, yeah, you know, just like the standard stuff. We do a lot of days off now. If we're in the kind of somewhere where we can't really find cool shit, you know, like it's a lot of like Walmart camping. I'm sure you guys have done that in the buses and stuff before where you kind of just got to kill some time.
Always a welcome sight of Walmart when you're on the bus at night.
I've seen the entire fucking chain of Walmarts across the states, dude.
But hey, Walmart, your like disability carts are way too slow.
And it's funny because you always have to park fucking far away, and especially like winter tours, and you have to like walk into the Walmart to like pee or poop. And,
I hate that,
dude,
shit.
You're just like the fucking mile or 2 mile walk from the bus. You're just like,
yeah,
just walking out of your bunk. You're just freezing.
Brutal. Or like when you're like, because like you know, a lot of times you stay there overnight or whatever, and you know we'll sit in the front lounge and smoke some weed and just try and like watch some funny shit or like watch you know whatever. My least favorite shit is like when you get like just that right level of stoned where you're like a little paranoid and you like get out of the fucking bus or whatever to like walk in to go take a piss or to go buy munchies and you're like, dude, this parking lot is dead quiet. And like there's always like stray cats somewhere in the bushes making noise and I'm always like all jumpy, like what the
Who's there?
Hell is going on?
And it's way too bright in Walmart for a stoned person to go to just walk in and
Got a hood up always.
I'd feel invited.
Our good friend Kristen Taylor has done way too much substances in her life, and she would always walk into Walmart, and those lights would make her hallucinate whenever she walked into a Walmart. She would see like colors.
Those
like
halogens
just
will catch you, dude.
They will, bro.
It's real. Let's talk a little bit about your setup, dude. What are you rocking nowadays?
Guitar wise, amp wise, you know, what are you loving right now?
So I still am rocking my Fender American Strat. I love it. It's the HSS model, so it has the humbucker.
Yep.
Which is primarily what I use for like the majority of all the dirty tones.
It's a bold call, but okay, we'll accept it.
Well, you have to remember I'm doing mostly rhythm kind of stuff, so I'm not getting too deep there. And then, pretty much for all the clean tones, it's my neck pickup. And then I have a Quilter, the 101 reverb is the amp that I'm using. Both Hunter and I actually both use those. You can't beat the compact, lightweight. They're both racked in the same rack. Like, it's great. And then my pedal setup is pretty standard. Crybaby Wah, Fender Phase, the Roland Space Echo.
Those new Fender pedals are really great, the new Fender pedals.
Yeah, I have the Pugilist distortion, and then I have a full tone distortion and overdrive that I kind of like go between both. A couple different delays, a couple different distortions, the Wah, the Phaser, and a tuner, and that's pretty standard setup.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on, because everyone else we've talked to so far, I think, has been on on Kemper, either the stage or the rack. Have you thought about transferring to that? Like, what are your 100%. Thoughts? Yeah.
100%. I love that, not only for the sake of like how versatile it is tonally, but dude, I'm like such a like fan of the most limited stage noise you can get. I feel like,
yeah,
for our front of house person, just being like on the other end, working at different venues, doing not necessarily front of house, but like monitors and stuff. It's just so nice to have a clean,
it really is,
limited stage volume. So you have all your in-ear monitors and like, you know, we don't have a bass amp anymore.
You don't need that.
So I would love to start getting into Kempers.
Also, shout out to Robbie, front of house.
Yes. Robbie Gasweiler. Yeah.
We love you, brother.
That's my main
That's
man.
My boy.
Dude, yeah, I'm so glad you pay attention to that, man. I've worked with some bands that's been like a mission, you know, and I get it because, you know, people are set in their ways and that's what you've been rocking. And if it works, you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it? But, dude.
There's so much room for improvement, though.
A clean stage will give you and your engineers a way better show. Everyone, all around, it's a win-win situation.
I 100% agree with you, man. It's so much easier to navigate, like, from an audio perspective. And then even from a stage perspective, you know, it's like, I think the in-ears were just a huge game changer. And back in the day before we were rocking in-ears and, you know, it's like, you're young and stupid and, like, I want my fucking amp to be the loudest one on stage and you're always competing with all your fucking dudes in the band. And now it's like, you can have whatever you want and you can have it sound exactly how you want it. And the person who helps us do pre-production for the majority of all of our tours is Joey. And he just dials in the best mixes. We don't really have to touch our mixes for the most part from pre-production to the tour.
Are you guys all on in-ears?
Yeah. Yeah. All of us.
You're on Shure's, right? The 525s or the 215s?
No, we're on the P3T, the 300s.
Okay, 315s, okay.
Yeah, so it's like kind of the more entry level, but they work for us. They work well. And
no, those Shure things, Shure also sponsor us, please. They have great gear. Their universal fits are amazing.
Hey, man, if you guys are ever looking for molds, let me know. I got some good people I can connect
to. Dude, I am always looking for molds. I just I need some that aren't like $1,500.
Yeah,
exactly. I got.
I used to actually have any the Ultimate Ears.
Okay.
Easy. When our trailer got stolen, I lost those.
Oh my god. Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
When did that happen? Where did that happen? And did you guys get any stuff back or? What did you guys do?
No, man. We
as far as gear,
we did Warped Tour in 2014, and one of the best tours I've ever been on my entire life. It's between that and the tour that we did with you guys, McCone, in 2018, the summer tour with Dirty Heads and Iration. Okay. Like between those two tours, best two tours I've ever done. But the very last two shows on Warped Tour, we were renting like the rocket ship, the modded out Sprinters at the time, and something went wrong with it. We had to be towed from Montana to Denver, Colorado.
Oh, man. That's a hike.
We missed the second to the last show in Utah and just went straight to Denver. And they had to drop our trailer in a hotel parking lot. And it wasn't connected to the van. The van had to go straight to a Mercedes dealership to get worked on. And basically, Robbie Gasweiler was TMing us at the time. And I woke up at like 6 in the morning the day we were supposed to be playing Denver saying like, hey, dude, all of our locks are cut and on the ground outside in the parking lot, and our trailer is gone.
Oh my god, dude! Poor Robbie.
Dude, he was. I felt so bad because I was like, I thought he was gonna get. He was like thinking that I was gonna like get mad at him about it or something. I was like, dude, this is not your fault.
Right.
But yeah,
right.
It was brutal, bro. Like we had just like emptied out all this stuff from the van and everything too into the trailer because we didn't know if we were going to get that van back and stuff.
So
basically anything that wasn't in the hotel room with us at the time was in that trailer. Clothes,
lost
fucking shoes, all of our instruments. Yeah, that was a hectic time.
That sucks. What got taken from you guys in the van?
Dude, the one saving grace, honestly, was when you do Warped Tour, when you're on one of the stages that has the production truck, you can keep what you're using on a day-to-day basis on the truck. Mm-hmm. And so basically it's, you're pretty much going to use their backline kit, most of their backline amps. So luckily we had some guitars and pedals and keyboards on the backline truck. So those got saved, but the rest, everything went. Like drums, our full kit, our amps.
So you lost the quilters, the first round of quilters, you lost those.
No, that was when we were still, actually, we hadn't gotten endorsements or anything yet. So we were, I had a Twin Reverb and Bryce had a JCM 900 Marshall.
Wow.
Classic.
412 cab. He was rocking a half stack. The biggest fucking heartbreaker of that whole, that trailer that got stolen, because that was only one of two, was there was a 1969 Gibson Deluxe.
Oh,
wow.
Les Paul Deluxe with the mini humbuckers that they only made for like 10 years.
Oh, dude, I love those. That's the Pete Townsend guitar.
Dude, and his number just three from Won't Get Fooled Again. Like so heavier than any bass you're going to pick up. You know, it was so heavy. And it was actually Merle Haggard's guitar.
Oh, man. That's rough.
Oh, no, shit.
A friend at the time had let Bryce use it. And Bryce actually hit him up and was like, hey, I'm going to bring this back. We don't use it that much on tour anymore. And it's just too nice of a guitar to just be sitting in the trailer. So he put all the original stuff back on it. Anything that he had modded, he put all the original shit back on it. And the buddy actually hit him back and said, hey, I just did a show at the venue that I work at. Merle Haggard was here. I told him about the guitar and he said, keep it on the road. That's where it belongs. So if it wasn't for that conversation, Bryce would have left the guitar at home and it would still be in his possession.
Dude, that makes me sad. I'm going to tear up thinking about that. Because you know me, I'm a big Gibson fan. I know Los is a big Fender fan, but I am Gibson all the way.
Dude, I think I like them both. I've had a Fender since we first started. And like my OG Fender that was actually given to me by a buddy was in our other trailer that got stolen the second time. So we basically started from scratch twice at this point. But, trials and tribulations, you gotta
embrace it.
You gotta learn, you know? And we started shit real young, and we learned the majority of the lessons that we've learned up until this point have been the hard way. And I think it's character building, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I want to ask, what's your dream guitar? Like, what's your dream setup? If you could just pick... And let's not even talk about Kempers or modeling amps. Like, if you could just choose your dream tube amp guitar setup, let's leave pedals out of it too. What would that be for you?
Blank check. Like, here you go. Buy your dream setup right now.
Dude, I feel like such a loser because, like, I'm probably going to have such a generic answer.
It's fine. It's your answer, dude. Own it.
And it's kind of like, do you guys know Dakota?
Of course.
Yeah. So like he posts stuff sometimes where I just like, it's stuff that's so far out of the box that I would never even think of. But dude, like honestly, like I would say a just super dope vintage Les Paul.
Let's go. All right. I like it.
I'd say honestly, like the OG, like legit real 64.
Gold top, or you going Sunburst?
I'm sorry. I just said it. Twin Reverb. Like the OG Twin Reverb.
Yep, great amps. Those OGs are great.
And with like a sick Les Paul.
What's your finish for the Les Paul?
What's
up? What's the finish? You going gold top original? You going to go Sunburst, tobacco? Silver Burst, black. If you're a pussy.
I don't even know if this is like a super rookie thing to say, like guitar wise, if they even like had this back in the day, but dude, I love like a white Les Paul with like black finishes.
I don't agree with that at all, but okay.
But I can say, bro, like I've always kind of thought like the three tone Sunburst was kind of just like a generic kind of thing. And then my buddy got a fucking jazz bass that was a three-tone Sunburst, and I saw it in person. And I was like, this is fire. Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's one of those things that every Sunburst is a little different, and when you look at it up close, you're like, wow, three-tone, this one's baby. So three-tone. Rad. Yeah.
But I can say, like, the setup that I've had for the studio work for the last few years, that's been amazing for me. Been that my traditional Strat, and I have an orange Rockerverb MK3.
Oh, it's a great amp,
dude. I'd say for the last 3 to 4 releases that we've put out, I think every guitar tone has come from that amp.
Dude, they're incredible amps.
That's amazing.
The clean, and then we use the dirty channel on that thing is like virtually unbeatable in my eyes.
And anyone listening to this podcast knows that I'm a Mesa guy pretty much, but I think in a close second is going to be Orange because they have just some amazing, amazing distortion tones.
Orange is my number one. I have 2 Orange heads.
Also, I want to put in my vote for the cherry red Gibson finish as one of my
favorites. Pretty, bud. I have to say, man, like as somebody who can genuinely appreciate some nice, nice gear, especially I think first off, you have to say like a home studio or a home or a studio setup is going to be much different than something that you're looking to tour on, because you're not going to bring your nicest guitars on tour, right? Like for the most part, like you get a vintage, you get that 69 Deluxe that we got stolen. That was such a mistake to have that on tour. I think personally, if it's something you're going to use every night and it's just something you can't part ways with, then I completely understand it.
Yeah, it's one of those guitars you tour, like if you do, you keep it with you at all times. Like you take that on the bus. You don't even put that in the trailer.
But some guys do that. My first gig was a guy traveling with a 64 SG.
I mean, unless you're like Tom Petty and you have vaults and they go in a fucking semi.
I was going to say is that the first, the Strat that I used for years was a Mexican, and I think it was Dakota actually did some work on it for me. I put some new pickups in it and messed with the head a little bit, and like he made that thing play so nice, and I would get it set up before tours, and at some point I just feel like if you're going to be playing, especially if it's kind of like entry level, like when we were first starting out, like I don't think you should even worry about like how nice the gear is that you're rocking with. I think that like you can play music on a lot of shit.
And I want to say too that Mexico is making great guitars nowadays. They've been in the game so long now that both of my Strats, my Strat and my Tele are both Mexi built, and they're amazing. They took a lot of work to get to where I wanted them, but they're amazing guitars.
Dude, we have the 3 guitars that are being primarily played, electric guitars that are primarily being played at any Pacific Dub show is my Strat, Hunter's Jazzmaster, and then we have a Mexican Tele that Hunter plays over half of the show on the Mexican Tele. And same thing. We haven't even changed the pickups in that, honestly. We just have it set up really nice. There's a dude in town that does great setups, and
I think the pickup change is essential because both of my, I have 2 Road Worn series, Strat and a Tele, and I put Arcane pickups in them along with the guy at Arcane, shout out, he has vintage paper and oil capacitors, and I put those in there as well, and that made a world of difference. So I think if you're going to play a Mexi Strat, you have to change the pickups and electronics in those.
They're in Burbank, dude. You should go check them out.
Yeah. Yeah. Arcane is just, they are absolute legends. They make all Dave Grohl's stuff. They make some waterproof pickups because apparently Dave Grohl loves to pour water over himself. So they do some legendary stuff over there.
Dude, when you rock that fucking hard, you got to pour water on yourself, all right?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. When you're playing Wembley Stadium, you do whatever you want.
Damn straight.
Exactly.
When like fucking Led Zeppelin comes out and plays with you, you do whatever you want.
And what an iconic
I love Dave Grohl, dude. Dude, so you mentioned you had a couple favorite tours. Why were they your favorite tours? And is there anything that stands out? And also, do you have a dream artist that you would just love to get on a bill on with, like, anyone?
Okay, so for the tours, I think anybody who's done Warped Tour, granted, I think there is, like, a pretty big divide between band and crew, because for crew, it's literally the most grueling fucking 7.5-8 weeks of your life, and it's 110 degrees every day, and sometimes it starts pouring rain out of nowhere. But for us,
it's like a festival every day.
Single day. But I think that's why we loved it, man. Like for us, it's a 30-minute set. Every band, doesn't matter if you're the biggest band on the bill or the smallest, you're playing 30 minutes. for us, coming from a genre that's primarily, at least at the time, primarily independent artists, a lot of underground following, and we're all kind of touring with bands that are generally in the same genre, for us to get outside of that scene and just see how all these different bands operate, bands that are handpicked, put together by a label, bands that have been doing it for 10, 15 years, bands that are in completely different genres. Like those, some of those dudes are just some of the nicest people we ever met. And then every day it's summer camp, dude. You know, like Warped Tour, if you don't have a late, if you have a late bus call, if it's like 2 a.m. or something, there's a barbecue every night for just the bands and crew. No fans, like nobody, you know, that's like awesome, and there's man. Any random bands that are on the tour are gonna pop into the barbecue and play a 20-minute set. It was just genuinely like going to a
that camaraderie is just another level in Warped Tour, because you're doing basically a festival every single day
in every day, and like standing in line,
it's more than just a tour.
Standing in the catering line, and you could be standing next to somebody from a band that, like, hey, I've been listening to you since 2004. You know, like it's just like I remember standing in line, like right behind me, like Kellen Quinn, the singer from Sleeping with Sirens. I'm like, bro, you are so famous. How is your tour manager not here, like getting your food for you? You know, like stuff like that. It's just like you realize that, like, some people are just like. Just enjoy it, you know?
Oh, man. I've toured with people that are pretty high profile, and it's funny seeing the difference of, like, there's some tours that the tour manager needs to get the artist's food and everything needs to be done and pampered to, and then there's other tours that the artist's like, hey, man, you don't need to do that for me. Like,
for sure.
They're happy to, like, get their own food and, like, just hang out and see everybody.
We had some friends that were in the catering band, so I could tell you... I guess when we turn the mics off, who is supposed to be the biggest nightmares of the tour. But some of the ones that you would think would be like, hey, you're huge. You could genuinely be a dick and you're going to get onto any festival anywhere. Like you'd be surprised. I was, that's my dog right there. Sorry about that.
You're fine. That
was, it was surprising and really cool to see some of these bands that I've genuinely been listening to.
Especially when it's like a band that you love and you finally meet them and you're like, oh yeah. Man, I'm so glad you're a good person. That makes it even better, dude. I loved it when that happens.
Who is the biggest person you've met, like your biggest fanboy moment at one of these festivals or shows?
Damn, that's hard. It's so stupid because I want to say it's like genuinely people from the scene. And I'd say it was like the biggest fanboy moments was when we were younger. Like, dude, like... Part of what I was saying earlier in terms of like us not necessarily being like the reggae roots kids was that like when we were coming up, there was already the Slightly Stupids, Peppers, 311s, Revolution, Iration, Dirty Heads. Like they were small. Like some of the bands, especially like some of the latter bands that I mentioned were smaller and specifically regional to the West Coast. But like, bro, like listening to some of these guys when Revolution was still playing shows at, you know, like frat houses in Santa Barbara, and like Iration is doing the same thing, and seeing Dirty Heads play at like little bars in Orange County. Like, I think all of us in the beginning, you know, we're 17, 18 years old, and like getting onto some of these shows that we probably had no business being a part of. And just being like, bro, like I used to drive however many hours wherever I could see, you know, Slightly Stupid or, you know, like, meeting the Dirty Heads was like a huge, they were such a huge influence. It was such like a cool, like formative thing for me because you're meeting people that have like really influenced you to get into the genre and get into the scene. And then also at the same time, they're some of the nicest guys around. So like also seeing like that, I just feel like most of my fanboy moments were probably from that. I can't necessarily remember. I guess we played Hangout Festival and like Halsey was in the trailer next to us and that was kind of fucking crazy.
That's
Anderson
cool.
Pack was in the trailer on the other side. So well, that was go. Pretty epic.
Oof.
And then like hanging out and like being in like the catering line with like people from like the 1975 and like Foster the People. Like Hangout Festival was probably the biggest festival we ever played. It's, you know, you guys know Hangout, like Gulf Shores, Alabama.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome.
So I guess fanboy moment, maybe that kind of takes the cake, I guess, now that I'm thinking about it.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one. What would be like your dream tour if like you could tour with any artist or band in the world?
No genre, genre specific or no?
No.
Doesn't have to be. Could be like Paul McCartney.
Robert Plant.
I mean, bro, like you Tim guys mentioned Paula. Like Foo Fighters, like come on, like something like that. Nirvana, like take it back to the old school days like that. I mean, like it'd be cool to tour with so many different. Dude, I've been really into like this like alt pop kind of thing going on right now, like Jeremy Zucker, like Quinn 92. I think that would be like a fun tour. That'd be something I would really enjoy. I know his Nathan, our producer, and I just geek out over some of that kind of genre because the production's so nice, so clean. He's but yeah. I don't know. That's hard, man. You give me too many options.
It never ends. It never ends, right? You know, Spoon, yeah. Wilco. Yeah. If you're going back in the day, Beatles, The Who, Zeppelin.
Exactly, and it'll be different every day.
Yeah.
If I could put my dream tour together every single morning, I would put together a different tour every single morning.
That's good. That makes me happy.
What about you, Los? What's your dream tour, Los?
Me? Oh, dude, I would just if it could be dead or alive, I think it would just be like. The Beatles and Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah. Los and I always come back to the Beatles every single episode.
And like Jim Croce and Bill Withers would have to be there too.
Damn, I like that.
And
what about John Mayer?
I fuck with John Mayer, bro.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, okay, fuck. John Mayer's in the bill.
Oh, yeah.
And
he plays soulful, dude. John Mayer trio.
Tame Impala.
Oh, Tame Impala.
With Anderson .Paak.
Dude.
And Leon Bridges.
Anderson .Paak.
Is that too many? Is that too big of a tour?
No, it's a sick ass tour. It's just Warped Tour, but like festival nice. Style, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, dude. If I could build like the Warped Tour of my dream, I guess that's what it would be.
So I have one more question actually for Carlos before we have to wrap this up. What was your biggest fanboy moment, Carlos?
Oh, dude. Dude, my biggest fanboy moment. I think it would have to be, I have maybe three that come to mind. One was definitely when I toured with Prince and getting to talk to him for like.
That was one of my big moments too, actually, was meeting Prince.
Epic.
And another one that comes to mind is I was watching Rebirth Brass Band. I'm just their side stage. Yeah. And then I just look over and Flea is right next to me. And he just goes like, he must have seen my face because I was just like, wow, dude. Like,
the jaw drop.
I'm just like a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan from the early days, you know. And it was just like shocking to me that he was just right next to me. He was like, hey, what's up, dude? And we just talked for a bit. And that was just like super cool to me, you know. And then I remember meeting Mike D from the Beastie Boys.
Ooh.
And he was super fucking dope, dude. Like,
that's a
nicest guy.
That's a good one.
And last one would have to be meeting Jimmy Cliff. Fucking legend, man. Hero. What about you, Chris? Do you have any fanboy moments? Maybe meeting Adam Taylor?
I met this guy named Colton, and it was just, I almost shit my pants, dude.
He said fanboy moments, not love at first sight moments, Chris.
Yeah, get it together, dude. We're on the Stage Right podcast.
I have two big moments. I'll go in order. The first one was Prince. I was hired to come set up a quadraphonic monitor set up at his studio in Minnesota. And he just...
Paisley Park.
And he just ended up popping in.
Dude, they're opening up that vault. They're releasing...
I know.
Did you see what they're releasing? Mm-hmm. Like, Sign of the Times with all these unreleased tracks.
I sure did. And...
Anyway, sorry to cut
you
off.
Good.
Go ahead.
But I was there. I set up that monitor setup with the company I worked for. It was an L-Acoustics DV-DOS quadraphonic setup on stage. And no one knew he was coming, but he just popped in a one-piece...
Like he does.
In a one-piece gray tracksuit with light-up high-heel sneakers. Yep.
What a fucking steez cat, bro.
Was he riding a bicycle?
He wasn't.
Oh, okay. Dude, he would ride a bicycle all around the arena.
No, he just he just popped in, like drove his car up and like ran into the studio and asked if anyone in the crew could drum. And I can kind of drum, so I raised my hand. So he said, all right, kid, come up on stage. And Prince and I jammed on stage for about 20 minutes, swapping instruments. First I was on drums, then he went on drums, I was on bass, then he was on drums, I was on guitar. And that was a pretty epic moment in my life. And the second one is I met Robert Plant at the Lochan Festival in Pennsylvania.
God, yes.
And I was working for a band called the Jayhawks, an amazing band. And apparently Robert Plant's a huge fan. So we finished our set and he walked up to us backstage and started talking to Gary, who I was hanging out with, and talking to the lead singer of the band. And was like, oh my God, I love you guys. You guys are amazing. I have all your records. Can we just like hang out for a little bit? So we just like sat in a trailer and like chatted with Robert Plant and took some photos for like a good 30, 40 minutes before his set. And that was a pretty big fanboy moment for me. That was pretty legendary.
Dude.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's a really good one.
That was crazy.
Dude, those are the moments, man. Like those are the moments, like you hear like the cliche, like, oh, you're making it or you made it or whatever. And like everybody wants to attribute that to like, I got the big house and we got tons of money and we're doing arena tours and shit. But like, I feel like there's different moments in your life where you're like, bro, I'm making shit right now, you know? And it's like, it's those moments. Like, it's the intangible shit. It's the moments where you meet people that you look up to and you play venues that you never thought you'd ever be able to play, and you just do shit. You know, the first time you ever do a nationwide tour, the first time you ever go outside of the United States, like those are the moments where you're like, you need to take those in and like
little
you said,
milestones.
Yeah,
yeah.
And meet the people that you never thought you'd meet.
And I think for real, it's a lot of the friendships like this. Three guys in three different states who are all close friends have toured the world or toured the U.S. together. That's the most special part of tour that no one really understands unless you've done it before, is how those relationships are formed and how much they matter later on in life, you know?
100%, man. Like some of the closest people in my life have come from this journey that we've been on. And it could be people like you guys. I mean, I don't know the last time I saw either of you guys in person, to be honest. But like,
I know, dude. Yeah.
You know, I'll never forget.
We're picking up where we left off.
Exactly.
Dude.
I'll never forget meeting Carlos when he was working with the Expendables.
Dude. Yes. Yeah.
And then, you know, McCone with Iration, like, dude, those are the moments, you know?
I just know the last time we saw each other, there was a big hug involved. That's all I remember.
Always.
Of course.
Always.
Dude. Yeah, man. Just seeing each other grow, man. I love it. I feel like so much love for my friends and everyone around me, dude, that's like creating and fucking doing what they fucking love and chasing their dreams, dude, and not stopping.
Same, man. And props to you guys for doing this. This is another cool way to bring people together and, you know,
Thanks, dude, I get to
sit here for like,
that's what we're trying to do,
for like an hour and just bullshit with my friends and that feels good. So,
dude, it's better than scrolling on Instagram.
You know? I think it brings all of us together in the way we used to be on tour. You know, it's kind of a way for us to do that same kind of bullshitting in the back lounge or on stage after soundcheck, you know, and that helps. I think that helps all of us mentally.
100%, man.
Yeah. It's like we're kind of on tour after the show, just hanging out for a little while. Make you feel like you're on tour. Just hanging out with us.
I'll go have a Coors Light when we get off of this and in remembrance of those times.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I hope those mountains are blue. Bro.
Yeah, they better be blue. Well, I think
they gotta be blue.
On that note, we should wrap this up. But thank you so much for coming on, Colton. We fucking love you at Stage Right. It's so good to talk to you again.
Dude,
I hope
we love you, bro.
Thank you,
well,
guys.
For you, man.
I love you guys very much. I appreciate you guys for the opportunity. And I'm gonna punish you to come back on again sometime in the future when we have some new music to put out. And I want to use your platform again.
Oh, we would love that, man.
Use us. Yes.
The feeling is mutual, sir.
Love you, man. Thanks for
love you guys.
Good to have you on here.
Appreciate you guys.
See you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, dude. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you. See you next week.